what is this faculty development effort that we took up with the Academy for Teaching and Learning at Baylor University. Simply put, the idea is instead of another set of workshops, another set of exposures to what John Udell has called the tech churn, in which we have an endless new series of websites, applications, sharing technologies, learning management systems, analytic engines, whatever, that we would try to drill down or rise above, depending on which direction you think we're going, and find unifying ideas and a history of those ideas about not just what computers do, but what they represent, why they came into being. We would get not just an endless series of gadgets, but a glimpse into the vision that brought us where we are today and in many ways has outstripped even what we've yet achieved. Why did I pick this particular approach? There were a couple of reasons. I'd used it as a first-year seminar in which the goal was not obviously faculty development. It was to try to help the fish know they're wet. That is to say, give today's students some context for the world in which they live and a richer, deeper understanding of what computers are and what they mean. Just to cut to the chase, I believe computers are the most interesting and in many ways most terrifying machines that human beings have yet built. They represent the farthest extension of our ideas of increasing human capability as a species. They are the thing closest to our own minds in their capacity as universal machines. Those are pretty big claims for the things we carry around in our pockets or in our lap bags or whatever. But I think it's true, and I think that by not confronting that, we're doing our students and ourselves a disservice. So I began this class as a first-year seminar structured around this book, The New Media Reader, which is really a set of readings in the intellectual history of computing. Very diverse, aggressively interdisciplinary book, essays from everyone like Scott McCloud to Bill Viola, going back to 1945, Vannevar Bush's epic As We May Think, sketching out a machine called the Memex, which in eerie ways resembles a computer and the Internet to go along with it. These readings are provocative. They are, by and large, perfectly intelligible to the general reader, and yet they give us a vision not just of where we are, but where we might be. As the editors of the New Media Reader say, these essays don't just show us what leads up to the web. They show us a world beyond the web, which we have yet to fully imagine or to realize. It worked really well as a first-year seminar. Students were startled to read essays from decades ago that not only described the world they lived in, but outstripped even what they were experiencing in 2010 or 2011. Emboldened by my success with first-year students, often in the first seminar they would take in college or even the first semester they'd be enrolled, I thought, well, what happens if we do this with faculty? Faculty like to think about ideas. Faculty get the deer in the headlights look really fast when you bring out the new tech gadgets and try to describe all these this endless stream of new things coming. What if we just backed up? What if we had a session in which we could do what we do as intellectuals, which is to think about these ideas and meditate on them, reflect together? So that was how the New Media Faculty Staff Development Seminar came into being. When that came into being, emboldened by some early success, I thought, what if we then made a network of schools at various locations anywhere who were all roughly going along the same syllabus at about the same time, it whatever meeting scenario worked for that particular school, whatever incentives the schools might want to provide their participants. At Baylor, we had a very modest stipend. We offered faculty of roughly $600 and a device of some kind. The early device was a Nano. Lately, we've been offering Kindles. The idea being, what can you hold in your hand and play with that instantiates some of what we're talking about? Plus, it's, as Tim Logan has pointed out to me many times, it's like that scene in Close Encounters of the Third Kind where the kid who's unafraid of this visitation from the mothership just looks at these spaceships going by and says, ice cream, To him, it's something of wonder. It's something that's potentially very pleasurable. And so we wanted to have a little ice cream for our faculty as well. And then I said, well, okay, so what if we network this? And what if it's not just faculty? What if we have faculty and staff together? I know some staff who are every bit as intelligent and accomplished as faculty, but there's this great divide in our schools where we've got the staff and the faculty. And what if we brought them into the room to think and talk together? And I thought, well, why not have grad students in there? And then last semester, I was very fortunate to be teaching the first-year seminar at the same time I was helping to facilitate the faculty staff development seminar. And one day, the undergrad said to me, Dr. C, could we meet with the adult class? And I said, yeah, we are adults. Whether we're grown-ups or not, you can judge later. But sure, let's do that. And it was a catalytic experience. It was quite extraordinary. I know that the faculty and the staff's response was, this is terrific. I wish we could do this more often. And it was fascinating to see how the undergrads felt themselves affirmed by watching faculty work their way through some of this material they were unfamiliar with, thinking aloud about it in ways that made it clear that faculty were not the sole guarantors and repositories of all knowledge, but actually learners as well. So that's been the story. It's been an extremely delightful journey of discovery for me. I've tried to build a platform for these things to emerge, these network effects, these interactions among sites, people reading each other's blogs. Blogging is one of the big things that we stress in this experience. And St. Lawrence University quoting Baylor, interacting with Rice, interacting with Houston Community College, interacting with the University of South Carolina upstate. Brandeis is in the network this time, Occidental College in L.A., and this is going to continue. So I'll give you the pitch right now. If you find this interesting, we would be very happy to have you in the network for fall 2011. Let me show you a couple of details, and then we'll get from the philosophies and innovations to the stories and hear from the participants. So this is what I call a mother blog. I borrow that term from Barbara Ganley. It aggregates the blogging done by the participants in the first year seminar. You'll notice a very poignant final entry from Colorblind. That's the pseudonym of one of the students in the class. Just finished my essay, by which she means her final exam, and I am sad now. I can't believe this class just ended. Usually you get a gasp of relief at the end, but her experience, not just of whatever wonderfulness the teacher was able to make happen, but really of her colleagues, her conceptacular colleagues, which is a word that we'll be letting Ultima unpack for us. It was very touching to me to see that now that this final thing had happened and the class was over, there was a sense of loss that now we weren't going to have that rich experience for another class meeting. This was the mother blog then of the first year seminar this time, and you'll notice that in adapting this to the faculty staff development model, I do the same thing. These are individual blog posts written by the participants in the seminar, and they are aggregated again into this mother blog. And like the first-year mother blog, there's a space for social bookmarking, which is aggregated onto the front page. I aggregate all of the site-wide comments onto the front page. And by the time we got to the end, people were getting to be, you know, pretty handy with their blogging and embedding images, embedding video clips, and so forth. It is no accident that this resembles this. The idea being, let's make as many self-similar environments to demonstrate the ongoing narration of the process of learning as possible. That's the way we're going to have these network effects, but also reinforce the idea that we're all in this together and that we're all learning together. This is the mother blog for this semester's network, this semester's Baylor local aggregation. This is the syllabus that brings the entire network together. It's not just what we're doing at Baylor. It's the overall guide to what the entire network is doing. All of this is being streamed and recorded today, so there'll be an archive with all these links, and I'm happy to provide them to you as well. The idea here is that there's a home base for the network to be able to see who's doing what and when, and also a guide to the philosophy and the design of the network. There are mother blogs and aggregation points locally at each of the schools, and then all of the content generated by all the participants is aggregated up into a NetVibes portal. This is a one-stop shop for folks to come and see what all the folks at the other schools are doing. Primarily, the communication is via blogs, which are a particularly interesting kind of interactivity, very essayistic, very much about the person writing, doing, reflecting, but then with all the bonuses of the blogosphere in that when you link to each other, you generate trackbacks, you see that somebody has cited you in another blog post, and you're actually participating in the new media world that we're reading about. You're actually creating this content and publishing it to the web. A word at this moment about the invaluable support of Alan Levine from the New Media Consortium, who has done a series of podcasts along the way, primarily but not exclusively with me, and this again is another feature we want to ramp up as we go forward, in which people at the individual groups, as the seminar is going on, have a chance to speak freely in a kind of a radio interview format about their experience, about the readings, about how things are going at their site, again, aggregating it up into this central portal so that there's a one-stop shop to get at this content. So what does all that amount to? It's a kind of spiraling grassroots activism. The idea being that if we are able to assemble and raise up a cohort at each of these schools, thinking at a richer and more informed level about the meaning of networked computing, what we're going to get in the end is something more than just dutiful faculty and staff filing into a room and learning Adobe Acrobat 9 or whatever the app du jour is. What we're going to get instead is a group of thinking people plugged into the history of innovation that's led us to this moment, who are then going to do what thinking creative people do, which is to go out and build on that platform rather than just click here and do the thing that they've been shown how to do. The platform is designed to not only permit innovation, but to make it clear that that's the way we're going to go forward. In its early days, the network design has only been in place for a couple of semesters, but already, when you read the stuff that's going on in the various mother blog aggregation points, you find things like faculty saying, I'm not as afraid as I was. I understand that there are thoughts and principles underlying all of this development. I understand how rich and diverse the pool of talent is that brought us to the world we are today. I don't feel as imposed upon. I feel like I'm part of a continuity of human aspiration. So with that, what I'd like to do is have a person from each role at Baylor who's participated in the seminar to talk about their local experience and also the experience of being in that network as well, what the seminar has meant to them and what lessons they might have learned. And there have been failures as well as successes. We're going to get to that. I don't want to pretend that this is some panacea, but perhaps something worth pursuing. So we're going to start with Rob Rogers, a faculty member and an administrator now, Associate Dean of Graduate Studies at the School of Social Work at Baylor, who was in the spring 2010, fall 2010 New Media Seminar. Rob?
Good morning. I tell you, as a speaker, I think the last thing that anybody would want to do is follow Gardner Campbell. Anyway, I'm a talker, not a speaker, so I don't have to compete. Well, I think I consider myself sort of a poster boy for the need for faculty development, professional development. Before this, before I participated in this seminar, I had never blogged, and I'd never used Twitter. I still have trouble making RSS feeds work and Delicious and Zotero in spite of having taken the training twice. I have a Facebook account, but I don't ever use it. I just got on because I had to check the school's page there and see what traffic was happening. I've used Google Docs a couple times, and that's only because I arranged to have my class, I have it taught to my class so they could use it to do some collaboration for around student projects. I didn't have a cell phone until I was given one as part of my role about a semester ago or a couple of semesters ago. And And I'm just now getting in the groove on tweeting. So you can see I'm a project in process here. So you say, well, how did I get involved in some cutting-edge thing, this new media seminar? Well, I serve on the Teaching, Learning, and Technology Committee with Gardner there at Baylor. And last spring, I kept hearing these glowing reports about all this excitement that was going on in these seminars. And so that piqued my interest. And then when he invited me to participate in the fall, I thought, wow, well, this is maybe a chance to finally get my bearings and find out something about this confusing world of the new media. So as far as when I was preparing to go in there, I had some expectations, and they're almost entirely intellectual. I sort of had learned to keep this stuff at arm's distance. First of all, I wanted to learn about the visions that these pioneers had. For this revolution that they were spearheading. I also wanted to learn about some of the principles that guided the development of the new media. I was just plain tired of being so disoriented and off balance with this endless parade of new gadgets and programming coming. And I just wanted to get my bearings. I wanted to be able to develop some kind of a framework that would let me identify trends, and more importantly, sort of say what was really a truly new innovation as compared with just another fad that was coming down the way. And then, too, I also wanted to be a better teacher. I wanted to learn how to use some of these, some of this technology, information and communications technology in my teaching and in my new role as an administrator. I felt a bit intimidated. I knew everybody in that class was going to be, a whole lot more tech savvy than me, but I figured that would be okay because the course wasn't about hardware and software. It was about these pioneers and their thinking and their visions. And besides, I figured that if you know Gardner, anything he's involved with, he creates this great sense of enthusiasm and camaraderie, and I figured he wouldn't be leading me into some kind of lion's den. Well, my experience in the seminar was far exceeded my expectations, and it was different in a very different way. I started, I came with these intellectual expectations of learning some things, and I expected just to engage it with my mind, but I found that I was immediately captured at an emotional level, and that surprised me. The whole process, the whole experience was intensely personal. Early on, I told Gardner that this was becoming a venture in emotional archaeology for me. I was born about the time that Vannevar Bush wrote his articles, How We May Think. And my childhood and adolescence was paralleled. In fact, my whole life sort of paralleled the development of the digital revolution. I was in fourth grade when the transistor radios came out, the latest and greatest, this fascinating thing. I learned about computers in college using Fortran and IBM punch cards. I've been there, I was there at the beginning, lived through it. One of my problems was that I wanted to. I was the Sputnik generation, and caught up in science and technology. And they all wanted us to be scientists so we could beat the Russians. And I always wanted to be this whiz kid. I wanted to be the technological guru. I wanted to be master of the universe, but it just never happened, as you could tell by my introduction. It still hasn't happened. I'm still in this angst and frustrated relationship with technology. But anyway, what happened when I would go and do these readings about these pioneers and their visions and everything, and suddenly I was reliving these memories, having to reprocessing all this stuff that was coming up, and so I had to deal with it. That just caught me off guard. I was going to go in there and just build my framework systematically like good professors do, but that wasn't happening. It just kept catching me off guard every week, and then. And then also I was found that I got angry, and I wasn't expecting that either. This was supposed to be sort of cool and rational. You know, like reading Theodore Nelson's article on computer lib and dream machines, I just got furious, you know, because I realized here's a guy who's talking about the use of this information communication technologies to free students, to free people for learning so they can pursue their passion, so they can become all they could be. Breaking down the boxes and the four walls that constrain people. Well, you know, I realized, you know, that here I was just guilty. I mean, I was guilty of building these boxes and perpetuating this industrial mode of assembly line teaching. And that was, you know, that really threatened and challenged my self-perception of being a good educator. That doesn't mean I wasn't doing some things innovative, but really I was just using technology a little bit as sort of to add bells and whistles to the, you know, the same old thing again. In fact, that's one reason I subsequently came to this conference, so I could find out how to get beyond that. And this was particularly challenging to me because in my new role, I was responsible for some educational leadership. And I figured, you know, I've got to get beyond this real quickly. So every week I kind of, you know, fear and trembling when I open the book and read another article, come and talk about these things. Well, it wasn't enough that I was having to process all this emotional stuff and deal with my threat, you know, my inadequacy as a teacher and a leader. But then we had to blog about it. Oh, my gosh. blog. Well, I've written articles, okay, but nothing has been as intimidating as writing a blog, believe me. You know, first of all, who is my audience? You know, I mean, just, you know, what's out there? You know, I mean, I didn't know how to even think about that. So I think what I finally settled into was sort of projecting myself out there and then writing to me. I guess, you know, sort of like journaling. I kind of survived that way, kind of closed my eyes and start writing, hoping nobody would ever see any of this. At least I didn't want any feedback. At first I didn't even read my peers' blogs because I just didn't want to be so intimidated by, you know, what they had written that, you know, that I'd be just paralyzed. I mean, I can function, but then this course has just pushed every button, you know. And blogging just, you know, sort of a hyperventilated, you know, experience for me. But anyway, as I began, you know, I began getting through this and sort of getting emotionally more free and loose, I found that I looked forward to what adventure was going to be this week. And the feedback, I did get feedback from my colleagues, and it was affirming. You know, they were struggling with their stuff too, maybe not quite as publicly as me, but anyway, they were quite affirming. And so I started commenting on their blogs. But what was really kind of neat and unexpected for me, you know, Gardner about halfway through said, you know, you really ought to start responding to, you know, told the class, respond to other people's blogs. You know, we got other universities involved in this and other seminars and not just your peers. So I tentatively did some of that, you know, and figured, okay, you know, who would care what I think, you know, about anything, let alone commenting on their stuff. But I found as people would respond, we had some interaction, I just certainly felt like I was part of this cosmic fraternity, you know, and I mean, I collaborate all the time in the work that I do, but this was quite surprising. It was more energizing. I somehow felt more connected in a strange kind of way. It seemed more personal to me to interact with people who are doing blogging than it did to have this dialogue by email and other forms of collaboration. So anyway, I think my time's up. I have some more to say about sort of the implications of this for my role. But basically, you know, I realized, okay, I just, you know, put it aside. I got to get out of the box. You know, I just need to bite the bullet. I really need to push beyond, you know, the same old, start operating out of my comfort zone. Doesn't mean that I feel the need to make every one of my courses a technological showcase, because that's not the case. But I do need to advocate for, you know, for this digital literacy, if you will, among my peers, and certainly with the students. They're pretty savvy, but they've got a lot to learn as well, to learn how to use it well and to serve them in their education. And then most importantly, I need to model the behavior I expect of others by doing this. So I think I'll just stop here. Thank you.
I think I may scramble the order here a little bit. Are we good for this? I'm going to call an audible from the line. That's the last sports metaphor you'll hear from me today. Let's hear from a first-year student at Baylor. She knew this was coming. She knows me too well. This is Ultima Castro, who's in her second semester now at Baylor University and was in the new media introduction to new media studies from Memex to YouTube first-year seminar last fall. Ultima?
I started off the semester during the summer. I had to reschedule my schedule, and I was advised to take Dr. C's course from Memex to YouTube, and I was expecting something more like just history. And when I got to the class, he was just like, we're going to blog, and you're going to do a final project, and you're going to tweet, and you're going to participate in class. And it was like, and he didn't say anything about grades. Like, he's just like, this is what's going to happen. You guys are going to do it. And it was like kind of freaking, like, not freaking, but it freaked me out. We were all freaked out. We were just like, we've never had a class like this before. This is a seminar, like, okay, seminar, discussion. And I didn't expect us to be so, like, online all the time. He was like, you're going to bring your laptops to class. Like, that's never really been something my teachers have said to me. Like, you need to be online. You need to talk to each other. You need to use Twitter. Like, that's just something completely different. It was great. As for blogs, we had trouble as a class, I think, getting used to participating in that way. And the first couple blogs, I was like, oh, this is what I'm doing right now. Wasn't really about what I was reading. And I think same for, like, the rest of my colleagues. And when we got to reading, like, I read the introduction, and we didn't really understand what Dr. C had said in the syllabus. It was like, read the preface. And none of us did that, really, which was kind of interesting because it wasn't very clear to us that we were supposed to read that. And, you know, it was a really interesting journey throughout the entire semester. What I felt personally was that I learned about myself as a student and as a thinker, and a thinking about thinking, which is something I really hadn't engaged in before. And it was kind of sad. And so I thought about why that's sad. Like, why isn't school something that enables me to do that? I should have done this a long time ago. And we were so, like, confused. And I got angry, like Rob, but, like, for different reasons. Because as a student, I was being taught in a certain way. And before, I'd been passive, like, throughout my entire education. I wasn't really angry that I had been taught a certain way. I was just like, this is the way it is. I have to be accepting of it. I'm not in control. And what I've come to realize is that we as students need to come together and say and talk to you, faculty, administrators, just everyone who's in charge. And we need to say, look, this is what we really think should happen. And we should collaborate. And Dr. C wanted me to give you a definition for conceptacular. So I asked some of my colleagues, and they didn't really respond. I was kind of upset. And I went on Skype last night, and I found someone I knew from my class. I was like, Jimmy, you need to define conceptacular for me, because I'd like to have someone else participate in this. And he didn't respond. So I was just kept typing. I was like, I'm going to creep on you until you respond. And he finally was like, oh, okay. And so this is what he gave me through email at 1 a.m., he's like, I have a lot of homework. I was like, well, that's okay. And then I was like, do what you need to do. But he's like, oh, no, let me help you. So this is what he got from the dictionary, and then I'll explain what it meant to our class. The dictionary is for conceptacular. It's a really old word, and no one uses it, and no one, like, the Microsoft Word doesn't acknowledge it as a real word, but it is. Okay. That which pertains to concepticals, and concepticals are that which something is contained. So the definition you could get from that which pertains to containing or understanding and or concepting / conceiving a novel concept / idea. So what conceptacular meant to our class is we originally started, we found that word after reading Doug Engelbart, who is Dr. C's just, this is the man. This is the man who's changed everything for me. And we were talking about conceptual frameworks and what that meant. Conceptual frameworks, a framework for your mind to deal with the concept. And you're like, where did the word concept come from? And concept had to do with, and conception has to do with other pertaining to the womb. And last night I was thinking about how to define conceptacular. And I was like, other pertaining to the womb. That's kind of like being in the womb. So that's kind of like growing and being in a protected environment that's kind of dark. You don't know what's going on outside, but you're growing, and an idea is growing, and it's like multiplying rapidly. And I was like, this makes sense right now. I don't know if it's going to make sense tomorrow, but it makes sense right now, so I'm going to tell you. And I was like, okay. But, I mean, that's what our class was. It was a nurturing environment, and we were lost. Like, we were lost so many times. And Dr. C would be like, that's it. That's it. Keep going. And we were like, what? What did we say? And it was just so hard. It was like, we've never felt that way before. Like, I mean, we'd have prompts and we'd be like, this, okay, we're on the right track, but I don't know what I'm saying to that makes you say that I'm on the right track. And so that would be what our discussions would be about. We'd be thinking about how we were thinking, and we'd be talking to each other and be like, why are you thinking this? Or I agree with you here, but I disagree with you here. And I've never had a class that, well, I've had one class in my freshman year of English. But it wasn't as close as Dr. C's class. We were so together, and we would be happy to have class on Sundays when Dr. C didn't have class because he was out of town, and we'd have a pizza party, and we'd talk about, or we would do class, but on Sunday. And so when I would tell my other friends in college, I'm just like, well, you're having class on a Sunday? That must be awful. It's like, no, really, it's the best thing ever. Like, I would love to have class every day. And so what Colorblind said, you know, I'm sad that this class is over. This class was like a catharsis for everything. And it was a safe place. It was a place where we could actually, like, be engaged in our thinking. And it was just completely different from everything I had last semester and what I have this semester. And it's sorely missed. Just so I feel like when I listen to Rob, It's a little interesting because the faculty, when we met with the faculty, we were talking to each other like right away, and we weren't seeing much on their tag right there. It was like they had a tag for the NMFS, fall semester 10, and we had ours, and we were like, they're not discussing as much as we are, and it was like, that's interesting. And then we were talking about how Dr. C blows them away just as much as he blows us away, and we were like, okay, this is good. And it was interesting to see their point of view because you could definitely tell, or I could definitely tell, that they were coming from a really different, like, perspective, like, completely. And so we were approaching this material as something, like, just, what, okay, this is something we're reading and we're discovering something, like, about ourselves. But it seemed to be something very, like, that was hard for us, but seemed a little bit harder in a different way for the faculty and whoever else was participating to look at this material and say, like, because it meant so much. It means a lot. It means different things to them. Or the material, like, connects on them on different levels, and it agitates them in different ways. And it was interesting to see that. I think I'm done.
We were, in fact, all agitated in different ways. So for another round of the agitation story, I'm going to go to our staff member then, Tim Logan. This means you're up last, Megan, so no pressure. Okay, good. Tim is director of the Electronic Library, which is where academic technology sits at Baylor University. And Tim was in the spring of 10, the first iteration, first go around. So, Tim?
Good morning. As Gardner mentioned, I'm in charge of the electronic library that covers centralized academic technology at Baylor University. We have a federated system, but my group in my area handles the central part of it. And I went into the workshop and the seminar with three different lenses in place. One was personal as a staff member. Another was administrative in my role as director of the electronic library. And third was supervisory for the staff in my area. On the personal level, I decided I finally wanted to do the reading that I needed to do. I've been in this business for about 25 years, but I'd never actually gone back and read the core material of Vannevar Bush and the others. I'd done some with Turing and Von Neumann, but never the philosophical underpinnings. And so I was very interested in doing that. And so I was going in as a staff member and for personal growth and personal development. In so doing, I made a choice to be fully engaged in the process. I didn't want to sit outside the seminar and watch other folks at work and learn how I could do my job better, but rather I decided just to dive in and be fully participatory, both intellectually and emotionally. And that turned out to be quite good. Second role was supervisory for my staff. I was in it, and then another one of my staff members was in it in the first year, first semester. Then each semester following, I've made sure that somebody from my staff is in there. This is the academic technology group, and we need to be growing again personally, professionally, and be participants in this so that we can model this out for other faculty. We need to broaden the reach of seminars and of the use of technology. And only by participating can we actually make that happen. So the staff have been involved, and I think good participants throughout. Finally, administratively, in my role as the manager for centralized academic technology, we needed to learn how to use new applications of technology. We also have a very close partnership with the Academy for Teaching and Learning at Baylor. We've tried to have that, as we have our more traditional centralized academic technology, but to work with Gardner to provide support for new and innovative activities, helped fund the ice cream that we gave folks, which was a wonderful thing. We decided on the nanos originally simply because they were so small. I felt like it was technology that would disappear into the pocket and then come out. It wasn't like a device that I had to carry around. It seemed to embody what we were trying to get at with new technology, and that turned out to be good. Kindle's more popular now, is that right? So, but they had the same meaning. And then finally, it was an opportunity to actually listen to the faculty. I knew our faculty were not technology leaders, and I wanted to hear them as they engaged with this material. I wanted to hear how they managed this journey. As Rob was explaining, sort of this angst that they're going through and an awakening, going from being one type of user to being somebody who actually understands technology. I wanted to watch and also be part of that journey, and that worked out pretty well. Best story I have has to do with a lip dub. Do y'all know what lip dubs are? No? Yes, no. Okay. I just looked it up so that I didn't have to make up the... A lip dub is a type of video that combines lip singing, syncing, and audio dubbing to make a music video. It is made by filming individuals or a group of people lip-syncing while listening to a song or any recorded audio, then dubbing it over in post-editing with the original form, original audio of the song. Well, for some reason, I was working on my computer on a Saturday morning, and I ran across a comment about high schools doing lip dubs, and this sounded fascinating. It was actually on parents.com, but I chased it down, and a lip dub, as the high school students do it, is that they get pretty much everybody in the high school, and they plan to do a music video of a particular song. But what's really cool is they do it in a single shot. This is one long 3-minute tracking shot, and that's really hard. And they will track through the high school, and different people and different parts of the student body will participate and sing parts of the song and all kinds of craziness. And it was wonderfully heartwarming, actually, for me. But it also drove home the expressiveness of the medium, that you could actually bring together a high school, which typically is relatively divisive, and do something enormously creative. And that's actually technically very, very hard to do, to get it all playing and synchronized so that you can track through in one long shot. And you can then dodge over to media, to film and talk about Badge of Honor, or Badge of Evil, which Touch of Evil. This long tracking shot with Charlton Heston crossing the border. And so you can get into some really rich traditions there. And that was really neat. And so I blogged about that. Well, not too long later, I heard from the high school teacher who helped organize that at the high school, and he said, thank you for mentioning us. And that's just wonderful. He also mentioned that their video on YouTube had been hacked, so there was a new link to it, and would I please do that? So I relinked and thanked him for his work with the students, because it was really very affirming and very illuminating for me. And so that was my introduction to the power of blogging. I had never expected to hear from that person, and I hope I helped contribute to their sense of accomplishment. Thanks.
So I didn't make up the word conceptacular. I didn't make up the phrase emotional archaeology, and I had no clue what LipDub was. This has been the great development journey for me when I set a bunch of bright, creative people in a room thinking about interesting things. I just watch it pour forth, and it's really quite extraordinary. So concluding our panel before we get to the Q&A is Megan Johnson, who is a graduate student in the Department of Neuroscience and Psychology at Baylor. She's a PhD candidate, ABD, all but dead, I think, is that? Yeah. And Megan also teaches in the Baylor Interdisciplinary Core, which is a fantastic integrative interdisciplinary curricular offering at Baylor. And she also is a graduate fellow in the Academy for Teaching and Learning, which is the program that I direct for a few more days at Baylor. They haven't relieved me of my duties. I've actually gone to another job. So Megan has seen many, many different phases of this journey, including the conversations we have among the graduate fellows at the Academy. Taking a page from Tim's book, it seemed to me that this would be a wonderful development opportunity for the graduate fellows working with me on various research projects and service opportunities having to do with teaching and learning. So, Megan, would you like to give us your perspective? Let me call up your slides for you. Okay.
All right. So it kind of works out that I'm going last because I'm going a little bit bigger picture with this. I'll kind of give you a little bit of concept or framing for the analogy I like to use a lot for sort of what it's like to sort of progress through technology, technological advancements, especially as they pertain to education. And I always like to think of the analogy of art. I kind of think of this old tradition, sort of the way art was, and forms were as we saw them. That was sort of the accepted status quo, which was good in its time. I think when that was sort of the case, it was very interesting, and to this day we can still appreciate some really great pieces of work. But of course, there's always going to be movers and shakers who like to change things up, and I'm super fast-forwarding through this, so for those of you who are a little more adept at the whole art history thing. But I kind of think of this as we're progressing with resistance. So if you think about any big movement, really in any field, but you know, in art sort of, when you think of Monet now, we think, oh, he's amazing, he's great, he's this famous artist. At the time, it was like, what are these dots? This isn't art. This is just dots on a paper. And I feel like a lot of times that's how we feel about technology. It's like, well, that's dots on a paper. That's not real education. But there starts to be this beauty and this appreciation if you can start to really work for it, work with it for what it is. And then, of course, you know, art kind of continued to progress. And sometimes we say, well, it's just chaos. There's just things everywhere. And this is, of course, one of my favorite paintings by Picasso. And Picasso was received with a lot of that sort of resistance. Like, well, this is chaos. What are you even painting? And I think my huge revelation of how amazing Picasso was is when I got the chance to study abroad and see that he was trained classically as an artist, but he sort of had this ability to let go and innovate and let things be something different and interesting. And so kind of where we are now, I think, is pushing for networked change. And this is, I'm a big fan of Pollock's painting, which is another person that a lot of people said, well, a four-year-old could draw that. But I think that it has an interesting implication when we think about in terms of technology that, yeah, technology is getting more accessible. And so can education. And I don't really see where the problem is there. I think the problem is we're seeing it as a problem when it's like, no, people can learn easily online. And that's kind of where I'm going to step into talking about my role in the seminar. So I kind of fortuitously hopped into it because I got an email because of the class I adjunct teach at Baylor with the Baylor Interdisciplinary Core. And it was very much addressed to faculty, so I thought, well, I should probably let him know that I'm sort of a poser. I'm actually a graduate student. So I emailed him and said, hey, I'm a graduate student, but I do teach. Can I be in this seminar? Because I was just really interested, because I've sort of had an ambivalent relationship with technology myself until recently, where I was sort of like, oh, there's just so much. I don't really know. Like, I waited 3 or 4 years to get a Facebook account after Facebook became a big thing, which, if you're my age, is kind of a big deal. Because people are like, you start on Facebook? Like, who are you? You have no identity. And it took me a long time to be like, well, I guess now that I'm on Facebook, I totally understand. Like, you don't have Facebook? How am I supposed to get a hold of you? So I've kind of always had this ambivalent relationship of feeling overwhelmed myself, even as a young person. And I think sort of charting the waters as a graduate student, I'm sort of indoctrinated or getting indoctrinated with the system of we do things this way. Everything's in a closed box. We don't want computers. I mean, I cannot tell you how many classes I have to sort of team teach where it's like, we don't want computers. We don't want anything. We don't want mobile devices. It's like, okay, well, let's try to find a way to, they're going to have their mobile devices anyways. Let's try to find a way to help them tap into what's happening in the classroom with that instead of letting them check out, because they will. And people check out even if they're staring into space. So we might as well get them engaged. So I kind of hopped into this really excited but nervous about sort of the change that I thought I'd see. So I kind of wanted to show you to see sort of where I've come in just a short year. This is sort of a backlog of one of my earlier blog posts at the beginning of the New Media Faculty Seminar. I called it a Watch Society, and I talk about my extreme hesitations on blogging. Of all the things, Gardner kind of was like, we're going to blog, we're going to tweet, we're going to use Delicious. I'm like, what is Delicious? I don't know. And I was really overwhelmed at first. Felt like I thought I knew stuff about technology, but this is a lot. But I was like, you know, I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to see what this is like, see how I feel about it. And so at the beginning stages of my blogging, I felt very watched. I felt sort of like, should I be disclosing my thoughts online? Like, what is the purpose of this? And I was in the first iteration, so we hadn't quite networked all the way out. But as I sort of started to vlog, different people in my course started to comment on my blog. And whether we want to admit it or not, we all want to know we're being heard. And that was a huge breakthrough moment for me to say, okay, well, I'm not just rambling into this, you know, the empty space of the internet, but people are hearing me, and it's a conversation, and it's a place to sort of be. And so through that progression, I think the blogging for me anyways was probably one of the biggest things, along with just sort of getting to learn new technologies and talk about how to use it in the classroom. And this is kind of moving forward about a year, almost a year to the day. A recent blog post I wrote on holistic education. And so now I'm blogging on education and how to use technology in education and teaching and learning and different things. And I feel very comfortable with it now, a year later. And from this, a lot of my friends have read my blog, and they're implementing things in the classroom. And it starts to be this networked change, kind of if we go back to this slide, where dots are connecting with dots are connecting with dots. And I've now gotten to use it in my own courses with my students. And I recently got a letter from a student who talked through how blogging helped her essentially work through a sort of occupational crisis of thinking through what she really felt called to do, and seeing the vulnerability of the other students in the class of, hey, everyone else is asking these questions too. I think there's a lot of silence in the classroom that blogging really helps kind of break those walls down. And so that's kind of my view, my experience with the seminar. And I think graduate students are key players in this move forward, because we're not indoctrinated. If you tell us to jump, we're like, okay. If you tell us to try blogging, if you tell us to try tweeting, we're like, yeah, you could tweet. And seeing this with my own friends who are teaching, very open for the most part to trying new things in the classroom, because we don't know how to teach. So we're willing to try anything. And so I think that, and we're close enough to that identity of knowing what it feels like to come from what is sometimes a failing system of not feeling engaged, not feeling connected in the classroom. I think they can kind of play a key role in sort of. So think about reaching out to your grad students as you kind of are indoctrinating them to embrace technology. So I'll hand it off to you.